All right, we're here, we're back, you know, back here to enjoy another day, you know, with there's some, how would you say your day is going?
My day? I would say it's going fantastic.
yeah, and do you know that there's a certain number out there that's like one of my favorite numbers all time, you know, really goated, one of the best characters in Codenames Kids Next Door, and he happens to be number 4.
Yes. So here we are with our Fantastic Four review. I'm Demetrius.
And I'm Demetrius.
And Meet Demetrius presents
the Blurred City Podcast.
All right. So we are covering either 1A or 1B of one of the two most anticipated movies of the year, This and Superman, both drop in July. Two most anticipated movies of the year. Superman didn't let us down. We will let you know our thoughts into the podcast, how we felt about the Fantastic Four movie. But going from there, let's hit the people with the legal spiegel.
The purpose of this podcast is to explore digital and print media. All sources we reference are owned by their respective companies, and our thoughts and opinions are strictly our own and reflect no biases or corporate agendas. Your discretion is advised.
All right, so quick housekeeping. Due to a lot of travel, next week we will be taking a break. The week after, we're going to have our mid-season finale, invite on a friend, and have our Avengers draft. With that, we're going to jump into the Fantastic Four pre-spoiler chats. With this, one question I always have to ask for superhero movies, did you manage to avoid all spoilers?
I absolutely did, because your boy was locked in, because mind you, I did not see it kind of like on opening weekend. I saw it actually at the time of this recording the day before.
Ooh.
So the fact of the matter is I had to be off the internet like the plague.
Yeah, so for me, I literally saw today of this recording, so Tuesday after the movie came out, because I was at Comic-Con recently over the weekend, and a lot, it was very hard to avoid spoilers with that. All I got was like kind of the sentiment of the movie, which I was happy about. Usually I don't even like getting that, but people said they enjoyed it, so that kind of helped me ease into the movie without any trepidation. The only thing that I would say that I kind of saw, this is slightly tying into it, is how important Franklin would tie into the plot of the movie in terms of like what Galactus's desire was, but that was because Marvel kind of dropped it in a short clip like the day before the movie dropped. So it's not really like spoiler, but it was something that I knew he was going to be in the movie. I just didn't know what role he would play. But tying into that, just for people that did see the movie or people that are interested in the movie, how, like, help them understand how powerful Franklin Richards is.
All right, so Franklin Richards is an absolute goat. He is an absolute monster. He is what Scarlet Witch wishes she could be. All right, she is what, basically, he is an Omega level mutant. Yes, it is. Yes, Franklin Richards is 100% a mutant. And he is an Omega level, which means his power has no finite limit. And what's his power? Reality warping to a near infinite degree, to the point where at one time in the comics, he could do something as small as a baby create a pocket universe just out of nothing, just to save the Avengers' lives. Or one time when he was a child and he was playing cowboy, he had a toy gun and then it fired real bullets. Yeah. And he was a tot then, like around 4 or 5. So yes, this boy, he grows up to be a problem. The ultimate problem. Thank goodness he's on the side of good.
And just a quick question, if the answer to this question is yes, don't go any further, but does he have any relation to the second Secret Wars comic book storyline?
No.
Okay. So I was just trying to see, as we go in, we're kind of, that's really into the movie post-credit scenes, but we're not going to go any further. So with that, anything else you want to say about the Fantastic Four movie?
Just know that, like, hey, this is completely different from Fantastic Four Stick or or the OGs, or the OG movies. Yeah, just go in with a completely different mindset and you'll be fine.
And the only thing related that you could possibly slightly need to know, but it doesn't really tie into this movie plot at all, is that the Fantastic Four ship does appear at the end of Thunderbolts. But
you mean New Avengers?
Yes. So, but it really doesn't tie into this movie at all. So we're going to get into the Fantastic Four spoilers in 3, 2, 1. Starting with the finding out they're pregnant and that we are on Earth 828, 4 years after the Fantastic Four become who they are.
Yep. And also this is 1960. So it definitely has that like that look to it and that aesthetic technology wise. But you got the Fantastic Four, Reed and Sue, finding out Sue's pregnant. They obviously overjoyed because of the fact that they've been trying for a while, and now it finally came to fruition after they basically stopped worrying about it. I'm like, story of my life. And then, of course, you got Ben and Johnny, you know, they chopping the bits. You got Herbie, my favorite character in this movie, Herbie, out here cooking, chefing up the meals. And then the two of them revealing, like, yeah, I'm pregnant. And of course, like, it goes into, like, a mini spiel about, like, oh, yeah, they respective astronauts. Reed and Sue, they already married. They went up, bombarded with cosmic rays, came back superheroes, fought a variety of villains, and now we're here. Which I'm like, good, good. You know, they just sped through the origins. You know, they're the Earth's only superheroes, and the world adores them. Yeah, the world adores them. Essentially, just one random day. Throughout the entire thing, they had Reed. You know, he's trying to like figure out how to be a dad. You know, he baby proofing the whole entire place, or really, Herbie is baby proofing the entire place again. My goat. but yeah. So, and then on a random day, the Silver Surfer comes, and not the Norrnrad male who was voiced by Lawrence Fishburne in the second movie, but instead it's a woman. And this woman happened to be his wife, who also became a Silver Surfer one time. So yeah, she's there. She comes down. It's like, hey, plan marked for destruction. And she flies off. Of course, Johnny's the first one on scene trying to get to her. Turns out, you know, he ain't like that, but he's immediately smitten with her. It's like, okay. Also, it's noted, like, at the beginning of the movie, like, you know, you had Johnny and Reed, they were like studying like alien languages, like alien broadcasts that were being transmitted to Earth. And then also the fact like Ben finds himself a little honey out there in the streets. At the Jewish, I don't know if that's just the church or an orphanage. I couldn't tell.
I thought it was a school at first, like when they first appeared, and then later on it was a thing.
Again, I couldn't tell if it was a synagogue, school, orphanage. That part doesn't matter. He just meets a girl. All right, he meets a girl, not Alicia Masters, by the way.
Unfortunately,
But yeah, so all that's happening. Okay. And also we know like, hey, Sue Storm, she's, you know, dealing with pregnancy while also still being a political figure as well, you know, bringing world peace throughout the entire world, except for Liberia.
That is important that you mention that, because it does establish that, hey, they create the Future Foundation, which is something that's very important to the Fantastic Four story.
Oh, yeah, especially when a certain something happens to a certain character that almost happened in this movie. So moving on. We got so they're trying to understand that. Reed's like, he's looking into like, OK, who is this Galactus? Sees like a bunch of planets that had gotten eaten up. They decide, you know what? All five of us, because, yes, Sue is still basically like super pregnant at this point, like she could pop at any moment type deal. They all decide to leave. Of course, everybody wishing them off, wishing them well, wishing them good luck. They develop a FTL, or faster than light technology, to travel. And by travel, I mean they literally just ripped off Star Wars with the hyperspace movement.
Both, like, Disney properties.
Yes, I get that. I get that. Y'all could have did something else. Y'all could have did any other iconography, but I get it. I get it. It's fine. I'll let y'all slide with this one because y'all did good. But yeah, so they arrived to a different planet because they were tracking the Silver Surfer energy. Mind you, another thing about this movie, comedy on point. You can really tell, like, these folks, they family, because they will rib at one another with various different gags. It's hilarious. But yeah, they arrive. Then they arrive at the planet right as Galactus already just devours it. I'm like, he was already chefing. They managed to escape. Well, they managed to detach the ship and try to fly in, only to get sucked into the tractor beam of the Death Star. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, Galactus' ship. My bad. While there, Silver Surfer, like, she's in, like, talking with Johnny. And he's, like, trying to decipher, like, what she was saying in her native tongue. And then from there, they meet Galactus. They meet that big boy.
Not the clown.
Yeah. He's actually a dude with the purple helmet and all that. And they're like, and he's just like, hey, typically, I'm one to eat planets, you know what I'm saying? But, hey, listen, I know y'all came to bargain. I know y'all came to bargain. I seen Doctor Strange, all right? Well, there is no Doctor Strange in this timeline, my bad. But yes, I didn't see the movie, but don't ask me how I saw the movie. But yeah, so I will save Earth. You just give me that child of yours, Sue, that's in your body, because he's filled with the power cosmic and he can help free me of my hunger so he can be the new Galactus, the planet eater. And they just like, nah.
Yeah, something I wanted to ask you, because when I initially saw Galactus, and then when it was also first announced that, you know, Galactus was going to be his actual form, like comic accurate, I thought of MODOK and how it's so interesting, the interpretations of the two characters, because MODOK, how he looked in the Quantumania movie, is that's his design, essentially. And with this Galactus form, you know, Galactus is a hard character to kind of like bring to screen, I would say, because of his size. Also, he's eating planets, so now you have to kind of show how he would do that in a reasonable sense without making him a cloud. But what did you think of the design with that as compared to a MODOK, and why, other than like just like straight visual effects, things that are probably beyond us to talk about, but why do you think it was like such a better design?
I think it was definitely much a better design because, all right, so here's the thing between the two, between MODOK and Galactus. When it comes to MODOK, firstly, he's like a completely different character, and like he was goofy. And then also the fact, like, when you see this, that face of MODOK, you're just like, so they just ripped off what's his name from Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl. Like, that's the type of vibe you get. Like, very, like, it's goofy, all right? But then there's Galactus. Like, he carries that aura, all right? And also, I think it's, like, a partially because of the fact that, A, one, this is the first proper scene of Galactus. We don't see no cloud or none of that. He just looks like himself. He got, you know, with some extra MCU armor plating, which I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You know, make it slightly more realistic. And he doesn't mess around. Like, even if he has, like, the blank eyes, it can, like, turn into, like, just his regular pupils. So it's like, okay, you're adapting that. So, like, you're good. He's just, like, a modernized take on a classic design.
I like that. Yeah, with it. Because, like, there were some areas where the movie's CGI was, like, very weak, particularly with the thing and the baby, like, early on with it. Yeah, especially the two of them when it was like thing and baby, especially when they interacted, it was just like, this seems so separate from what's actually happening around. But I mean, other than that, I don't think it was too bad. So I guess just transitioning from there, they have, you know, the very cool scene where they are racing the Silver Surfer through the wormhole and then also around a black star. I mean, a black hole.
Yep. It was very awesome. You know, like they're using the FTL travel, and then it turns out like, oh, snap. I can't hear because we're in hyperdrive, so the beams are are bending, so I need to recalibrate for that. I'm like, okay, that's actually like scientifically accurate, because ain't no way you could just shoot straight in that type of thing. So, all right, we're cool there. And then you get to a black hole, very reminiscent of Interstellar. And another thing I really liked was the fact, like, hey, we get to see spaghettification out of somebody, where, like, essentially you getting stretched out for all of time. Soon we'll see another case of spaghettification, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that when we get there.
Something with this part, as before we like get to when they return, and also like Sue is going through pregnancy at this part. Like,
it's, oh yeah, she's giving birth right there.
So, but something that was really cool is that this, compared to the other movies, showed how intergalactic and interdimensional that the Fantastic Four is to the comics. Yes, they have some villains that are like street level. Yes, with Doom, it like elevates depending on how big of a threat Doom is. But a lot of times in the comics, particularly like We Love Spider-Man, it'll be like, oh, where's the Fantastic Four? They're off in space doing something. Where's the Fantastic Four? They're in a different dimension doing something. Where's the Fantastic Four? They're like underground, fixing some kind of ripping the universe or something like that. So I really loved how it showed them as, you know, intergalactic like that, and it didn't feel like, whoa, what is going on right now? So I thought that was also really cool to just like show it like that.
Absolutely. So then a month passes and they arrive back on Earth with their baby boy Franklin in tow, and Reed, in my opinion, kind of screwed the pooch like badly at this part. So he has a press comp. So there's, of course, the press conference. All the reporters, they congratulate him. Hey, how y'all defeat Galactus? He's like, we didn't yet. And he's like, we went there to negotiate, and there was an offer on the plate. And he said, no. I'm like, bro, you should have shut up just right there. Actually, you should have shut up right before that. It's like, hey.
I wouldn't have said, yeah, no.
It would be like, okay, hey, we couldn't defeat him yet. Like we tried to go up there to negotiate. Galactus is an evil monster. We couldn't do anything about it at the time. So we needed to come back here, get our resources, and go at him. Nope. Instead, he decides, like, one of the recorders asks, like, hey, what was the deal? And he's like, he was spared Earth if we gave up our son. And immediately everybody started to turn on the Fantastic Four. I'm just like, y'all are a bunch of hypocrites. I'm not even gonna lie, because what would y'all do in that situation? And that's like the big philosophical thing. It's like, hey, what would y'all do? Especially if you were a newborn parent, a new parent. Is that, like, hey, somebody gonna needs to take your child away so we can save the entire Earth? And it's the whole trolley problem on a planetary and much more not hypothetical scale, quite literally. So the Fantastic Four, they're considered pariahs. Reed, he's basically losing his entire mind because of the fact, like, he can't figure this out, which is like, hey, it's real. Like, he can't figure this out. He's trying to like talk with everybody. Sue's like just dealing with the baby and dealing with the fact, like, hey, people hate their guts. Being like he was out, and then like some people like, hey, we got families too. And it's like, yeah, things is looking bad. But being like he's able to, like, you know, calm Reed down a bit, and, you know, like, they had a heart to heart, you know, about the fact, like, Reed couldn't transform Ben back, but it's all right. And then all while this is happening, Johnny is actually translating the language, and he manages to finally figure it out. He managed to figure it out, as well as like some other transmissions, and then all of that's happening. Then it comes to like a real head where Sue and Reed, they have like a pretty like a big argument about the fact, like, hey, that Reed contemplated giving up the child. to where he contemplated doing it, and Reed just said, like, hey, that's just how I think. Like, I think with the worst scenarios in mind, just so I could stop said scenarios. But Sue's like, this is our child. Like, you should never think that way. And then eventually, like, you know, enough is enough. She goes outside and has like a really impassioned speech where it's like, hey, where basically the crux of it is, hey, we're people, we're family. I'm not giving up my child for Earth, but I am not giving up the Earth for my child. We gonna figure this out.
Yes. And that was one of like the better parts of the movie, but also out of all the things that happened, the most unrealistic.
I say the people would have ganged up on them immediately and took the child right out of their hands.
One thing that was, they did a really good job of like this being a different world is that it's more an optimistic world, I would say. Cheery, again, as you mentioned, they solved world peace, essentially. And then not only just between like different nations other than Liberia, but also with the Mole Man and the underground people. So it works in the world that it's set in. It's just like if you think of today's world or even the main Earth 616, you'd be like, know about all that, because they don't even like superheroes and vigilantes right now. And like they're going through it twice in terms of the Daredevil series and then also with the previous Sokovia Accords. So
cool.
But I did enjoy the speech, and it was like heartwarming considering this is the family tale. So with that, Reed, he's like, hey, you helped me solve the solution, the lever solution that he wrote. So essentially you find the small solution in order to find the bigger solution. And with that, earlier in the movie he teleported an egg. He was like, hey, let me teleport the Earth to a different place where Galactus can't find us. And then going from there is like, oh, again, this was the part that was kind of unrealistic. The entire world works together, electric curfews, all in harmony to try to survive Galactus.
Yeah, nah, this that part was like, ain't no way, because we know at least 300 people at least who would not obey that curfew.
Yes.
And one of them is on this one of them's on this podcast, I ain't gonna lie. Which one is it? Y'all gonna have to let us know in the comments which one of us you think would break that curfew. But yeah, so they managed to devise that plan. Also, another part that was very realistic was when they showed the news and like one of them was like, yeah, so now there's a doomsday cult dedicated to Galactus. And I'm like, that's about right. That's about right. But yeah, so they build all of the they build all of the teleporters. They build the entire bridge. They ready. They push the button. It looks like it's all going well. In the end, one bridge goes down, another bridge goes down, and another bridge goes down. And at first, I'm thinking like, what in the world happened? Like, is there? I'm like, hold on, what type of implosion? What in the sabotage? And then you see it's Silver Surfer going in and destroying each and every last one of them. You're just like, okay, that's about right. So yeah, it's like, okay, oh crap. Now you got Reed, who's basically like scrambling for like a new backup plan, all while Johnny rushing in at Silver Surfer.
This was a phenomenal scene.
Again, one of the goats, unsung hero of this movie, where he basically like gets her to Times Square, takes over all the monitors and replays like her messages, and he starts speaking her language. I was like, hey, you're Shala Bell. And like he's like, I know that you chose to become Galactus Herald in exchange for sparing Zin La, your world. Here's transmissions from your people basically praising you for that. But at the same time, though, here are transmissions of you killing all these people.
Billions upon billions, yeah.
Billions of lives. And it's like, hey, you need to do this. You can make a choice. You cannot be his herald anymore. And like she just can't handle it and leaves.
And for people that don't understand the dynamic between the Silver Surfer and Galactus, do you want to kind of explain that?
Oh, yes. So essentially, as Well, Galactus needs a herald to go scout out worlds for him to devour. Reason being is because it turns out, like, Galactus, he can only feed or really gain nutrition, if you will, from planets that have life on them. So what he usually does is that he usually gets a herald and, like, he makes, you know, somebody like either Silver Surfer or Terax or anybody like that to go and scout these planets, and thereby, like, letting the people know of the planet know, like, hey, Galactus is coming to eat your, devour your planet, praise, worship, glaze him, do whatever, make your final peace, go say your final goodbyes to your family, go knock out your coworker, do whatever you want, but Galactus is coming and he's gonna take your planet. And as Galactus Herald, he gives them some cosmic power, some power cosmic, if you will, to basically survive being his herald.
Yeah, perfect.
And then the next part, which is, again, another, like, potential, like, an argument moment within all four of the Fantastic Four, where Reed, he's like, okay, I think, like, he finally realized, okay, if we can't teleport the Earth away, why don't we teleport Galactus away to, like, the farthest reaches of the universe so he can't find us? And, like, we got this one teleport left. We can rig it to where he can do that. And then they're like, how in the world can we do it? How can we get Galactus down here and on that teleport? He's like, and then he just looks at the baby monitor. And then Sue realizes, like, so you want to use Franklin, don't you? And immediately no one else is on board. And then they're admonishing him. Sue just, like, yells at us, like, I know what to do. And she just disappears. I was about to say teleport. They're like, no. I mean, it basically is to a random person. Like, you turn invisible and then you just go away. Mm-hmm. And you pop up somewhere else and just. But yeah, so continuing on, right? We have this really cute moment where, like, Sue's at the teleporter with baby Franklin, and then Reed is, like, pulls up behind her, and they end up, like, having a talk, basically just like how he promises that no harm will come to them, and, like, no harm will come to them and will come to Franklin, and they just have a real good heart to heart about it. So from there, and, like, she's finally on board the plan. So she gets back. They all finally, like, are on board. It's like, this is the last resort. So it's like, but the fact Galactus is so huge and New York is densely populated, everybody is cucked. All right. But then, like, Sue goes, like, hey, I know exactly who to call on for this moment. Call upon a mole man. He's like, hey, can our people, you know, can surface dwellers dwell in Subterranea right now? And of course, like, he's being an insufferable monster, like, you just teasing Reed, and, like, all three of the dudes just want to punch him out.
It was so funny. I knew he was gonna ask. He was gonna tell Reed to be the one to ask.
Yup. It's like, I want him to do it. And then, oh yeah, don't forget the part where he tells John's like, hey, get your terrible suit out of here. I'm like, and John looked like he was ready to supernova him on sight. He's like,
that was funny.
But yeah, but it just turned out to be an act because of the fact, like, he was just masking how scared he was, and he was masking it with comedy. It's like, dang, that's actually also real.
Yes.
So yeah, they get all that, they execute the plan. Plan is going well. Galactus is well on his way, and Johnny switched out the carriage with a
fake. Quick question, because I saw how big Galactus was, and this was what popped into my mind as soon as he, like, stepped on foot. Could Godzilla beat Galactus?
Absolutely not. Wait, hold on. Which version of Godzilla, though?
Monsterverse Godzilla?
Absolutely not. Listen, I love my boy Godzilla. I love him, all right? He my goat, for real. But that lizard is getting absolutely stepped on and folded by, oh, wait, what was that?
Also, he's as big as Galactus in the MonsterVerse, though.
Nah, nah. Too much cosmic power. He getting kicked.
That's fair.
He's literally getting punted. And also, I don't know if you know this, but that ain't Galactus's true size. That's only how big he needs to be.
That's fair.
He's a planet eater. Come on now.
But in this one, they showed it being the ship that was kind of harvesting the planet for him to devour it. I don't know how, but I know Galactus is humongous.
So that ain't good. He fallen for the plan, hook, line, and sinker. Johnny swapped out the carriages and put them back in the Baxter building with Herbie. And then right before Galactus steps, like in that one step needed, he goes, scan, looks and sees Franklin all the way over at the Baxter building. He goes like, you clever little bugs. You almost got Galactus. Toodaloo, suckers.
Toodaloo.
And yeah, so he starts making his way towards Franklin. And of course, they're all like, oh, crap. All right. We need to go and get Galactus back here. So they trying their best. They really try their best. Johnny keep trying to set him on fire. That mm-hmm. obviously does nothing. You got Ben throwing cars at Galactus and throwing it
tossed into space.
Yeah, gets literally just yeeted out into space to where only Johnny had to fly all the way up to grab him. Because I was like, oh, snap, is this rats for my boy? Turns out it almost was. In the end, and then Reed tries to, disconnect him from, well, not disconnect him, open up the holes in his back to expel energy.
Which was smart.
Yeah, it was smart. But remember when I said there's another example of spaghettification in this movie? This was it.
It was the Conquest Kid Omni-Mattress.
Yep. It was the Conquest Omni-Kid. Yep, just getting stretched out. And then he makes his way to the Baxter building. Oh, wait. Also, right before this, like, Sue tries to, like, use her car to get to him, and he just flicks her into a building and knocks her out. Galactus goes in. He goes to the Baxter building. My go Irby was there protecting Franklin. It's the lockdown protocols. And tries to body block for Frank. I'm like, that's a real one right there. Irby the goat, only getting taken out by Galactus. I'm like, dang it. So now Galactus has Franklin in tow, and he's about to do his thing to make Franklin the new Galactus. And this is when Sue Storm, she goes full mama bear. The mama bear of all mama bear moments, to where she uses the force itself, using her force fields to basically push Galactus by herself. And Reed is very concerned for her because, like, Galactus is too big, but she's like, get the baby, I'm pushing.
It was interesting at first, because at first I thought she was simply trying to just, like, topple him over. And then they made it clear that, like, once Reed was like, hey, you gotta chill, that she was pushing him towards where the gate for the teleportation was, and that was insane. And then just seeing them all kind of work together with, like, Ben knocking out, like, the building so Galactus can use it as a prop to hold himself up, Reed doing his thing and everything.
And it's clobbering time.
Yes, as he got dropped from space to save Reed at the time. So that was really cool. So they managed to get him into the wormhole temporarily, and then but then Sue passes out. So then he reaches out and, through the wormhole, and Johnny's like, tell Franklin his uncle loves him. Like, he's like, oh, you already see he's about to make the sacrifice. And just as soon as he goes in, because he's gonna, like, obviously kamikaze himself, push Galactus in, then we have the Silver Surfer hit him out the way, a la Last Jedi style, which made me immediately think of you.
I didn't even think it like that, man. That was nowhere near my mind, because
it's the same thing though.
It is. It is, now you're saying it. it was the farthest thing from my mind, though. But at least she succeeds in this.
Yes.
At least this actually works.
Yes. Yeah, so she hits Galactus dead center chest, and they both get hit, sent to the wormhole, which sent them to a random place at the end of the solar system.
The universe.
Yes, essentially. So that kind of takes them out of the picture for the next million years or so. Unfortunately, she's going to be trapped with Galactus, so that kind of sucks. But with that, they return. We see Sue is dead, essentially. So they're trying to revive her. Reed is trying to revive her. She's not breathing. Heart isn't beating. They kind of accept it, but we see Franklin. He's crying and then reaching out to his mother. As soon as they place him on top of his mother, she's then revived, and in her eyes, you can kind of see the cosmic star type situation, and it turns out that he revives. Franklin was the one to revive his mother. Something that also we need to point out is that this entire time through the pregnancy up to his birth, Reed is building these machines to kind of scan for any anomalies that could occur within Franklin, because obviously their DNA is compromised by radiation, cosmic radiation. All the scans turn out clear. They're like, okay, it's going to be a normal baby. It's not until Galactus is like, hey, he's hiding his true nature from you no matter what scans you do. So then Reed, after he's born and Galactus is on the way, is like, hey, I'm not going to do these scans anymore. Just show us in your own time. And that was kind of how Franklin showed how powerful he was. So anything else before we just get to the post-credit scene?
No. It's a celebratory moment. Everything cuts a year later. They on the talk show, and then you get a pretty funny gag about three men not knowing how to work a baby teeth. All white, the mom and the child just looking, rolling their eyes, just like boys. Mm-hmm. And then it's not even the post credit scene; it's the mid-credit scene.
Yeah, mid-credit.
Which what I turned out was actually filmed by the Russo brothers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So what happens is that it's 4 years later. Sue is now reading a story to Franklin. And then she goes to grab another book. And then in the meantime, she gets back to him. Like, again, she goes from the living room to the kitchen and then back to the living room. And in that time, you see Franklin talking with some green cloaked individual holding a silver Iron Man mask. And he's just like, And also, yes, it has been confirmed. That was 100% RDJ.
Okay, interesting. I saw the mask, but I didn't. I just, like, my brain, I feel like, just automatically made the mask the Doom mask. But now that you mentioned it being the Iron Man mask, makes so much more sense with that being RDJ.
Yeah, it was 100% the Mark One mask, you know, from him in the desert in a cave with a box of scraps.
Nice.
Yeah, basically that mask, but much shinier. So I'm like, ooh. But yeah, that was Robert Downey Jr. And yeah, that was our first look at Dr. Doom, even though we don't see his face.
All right, so before we get into anything with Doomsday, let's focus on this movie. So obviously, I'm going to go out on a limb and say we both enjoy the movie.
Yes.
All right, so obviously the last one, the Fan Four stick that we had to do a deconstruction and reconstruction on, let's just throw that one out. But comparing this movie to like the first two, what does it improve upon and do so well? Because I guess, I was a kid. We were both kids at the time the first two movies came out. So I didn't actually really mind it that much, those two movies. Obviously, looking back on them, they're not the greatest movies in the world. But like, was this movie able to do that improved upon them?
I think one big thing is definitely like a much more, well, firstly, is the reception to the Fantastic Four in terms of like the world. So like within the world that they're set in, like in the first movie, they were just considered freaks. And second, like freaks and mutants. And in the second movie, they had a much better reception, but it was like there was still some cells out there that would rather see them go jump off a cliff, the military. But you look at this one, all the, like the people, they all love them. They cherish them. They glaze them to
literally everybody.
And when I say, yeah, everybody, kids, dogs, anybody who's not like a supervillain glazes the Fantastic Four. and just for his doom. But yeah, so like they all love them. Another aspect is again the much more familial aspect. And oh yeah, it's like, okay, in the first, like you kind of see like them joking around, or more so Johnny and Ben mostly
Yes.
bickering with each other. In this movie, everybody went after everybody, which is very much more family-like. Like everybody is on everybody's tail for some reason. And it's like, yep, that's just how family works. And I think another thing that they improve upon is not just like the power aspect of each person and like showing how well they work, but how well their minds work with one another. Like each one being able to kind of like fill the gap that the other, like another person doesn't have. So like, for example, Reed, of course, he's the smartest one and is also the most, like also the strategic one, but he's not the best people person. Sue definitely is the most people person, is the most people person of the group and also the heart of the group. Ben, he's like street level, so he can, yeah, he's smart in his own right, but he's like, hey, you gotta consider this or that. And then Johnny's the wild card. He can do whatever the heck he wants, but that makes him the unsung hero in the sense like, hey, either like he will come up with something that the others either think is wildly impractical, which later turned out to work, or is the possibility that they never considered in the first place.
I like that you mentioned the dynamics because I really love the dynamics in this movie so much. Even like with it being four people, I felt like in all of the other movies, someone usually gets underserved, usually being the Invisible Woman, who in this movie will be getting multiple awards. But I think just like with this one, Reed and Sue, just like they're back and forth. It's not Reed trying to pursue Sue, or like even like in the second movie, I would say Rise of the Silver Surfer, where it's just like they're, oh, it's focused, it's centered around them getting married. It's like, okay, it's already an established dynamic between that. Johnny and Ben was my favorite dynamic because it was like essentially how they are in the comics, where it's like it almost feels like the thing is Johnny's big brother in a sense, and they have that combative relationship, but you can tell it's all love. At the same time, the thing and Mr. Fantastic, he's able to keep him grounded, like you said. And then just Sue just bringing literally everyone together and the different things. And even with Johnny in the first two movies, he was, Playboy. In this one, he was, like you mentioned, wild card, but it wasn't like Playboy. Playboy, it was just like, oh, eccentric Johnny. But even like in his interactions with Reed, like in that first scene that they had, well, not first scene, but the scene where they were alone together, where he was his 215 and he's like, hey, here's the suits for the new space, the space suits to go back into space or whatever. And even though Reed is like his neurotic self, he's still able to like slightly listen to Johnny, So it wasn't like just go stand in the corner, but it was like, hey, I'll take this under advisement. So.
And I think another thing that I feel like is improvement is the tone of the movies, Another thing I really like is the tones of the movies. Is like with this one again, it's like a, as you mentioned like earlier, it's like very much more optimistic, very much upbeat. Think of Superman, like actually both movies, like very much like, oh wait, hold on, I'm just now realizing something. All right, both movies are very upbeat, very like has comedic moments, very again, upbeat, hopeful, if you will. And they're both coming off the heels of a very controversial movies that definitely did not keep that regular tone at all.
Well, one,
Dark and pretty.
they use color.
Yeah, they sure did. It was a very colorful movie. Everything had color. Nothing was gray and black. But yeah, it's like, okay, so now you got like a movie, like movies that are portraying characters almost exactly like how they would in the comic.
How do you feel about, because I just had a conversation with someone about Reed's neuroticism, and there's this like Pedro Pascal being cast as Reed.
So, okay, so in terms of like Reed and like how he's characterized, I feel like that's very like on brand for him. And yeah, it's very like many people actually speculate like he, like Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, is on the spectrum. It's like somewhere on the spectrum. Where in the spectrum? I don't know. But like he does exhibit like those kind of qualities. And when it comes to like Pedro Pascal, like he does a great job like portraying that. Of course, like whatever's like happening like off the screen, notwithstanding, but it's like, and also the fact like people are starting to get sick of Pedro Pascal being in everything. But still, it's just like, hey, he fits for the role and he does well with it.
Nice, nice. So anything else with that before we transition to our next big question related to Doomsday?
Ooh, let's get into it.
All right, so the big question after this movie is, are we ready for Avengers Doomsday, which is projected to be December of next year, 2026? My quick answer is no, and it might be controversial, but it's no.
Okay, so for me, it's like, okay, they're getting the pieces, but I'm going to say no as well, only because like there hasn't been as much buildup to it. It's like, yeah, like this movie definitely is like setting up for Avengers Doomsday. And so is Thunderbolts, kind of. Well, yeah, I'll say Thunderbolts is as well. But other than that, it's like, really, there's not much else. Sure, there's like that Doctor Strange, and there was that the Eternals post credit, and then there was also Shang-Chi. That's about it.
But the reason I say no is, one, I've heard saw reports that the script isn't finished for Doomsday. One, and then two, it was already pushed back from when it was supposed to release in June or July of next year, which is concerning. And now it shares the same release date as Dune 3. And the way I know we felt about Dune 2, but the way people talked about Dune 2 is like a revolutionary movie. So now you're going to have probably one of your biggest movies since Endgame, considering the fact that you had to bring back RDJ, go up against a movie. Now, we've seen it work with Barbenheimer and then that situation, but those were two completely different movies with two completely different crowds. Dune and Avengers are going to have the same exact crowd, mostly. The Venn diagram of overlap is very high. Most people might go see it the same weekend, but with it being IMAX, decisions will have to be made. So, yeah. And then just one thing, I also feel like Kevin Feige has recently kind of been in damage control mode a little bit with certain movies, because with Captain America, he just said, like, hey, it didn't do that great numbers-wise because it was the first movie without Chris Evans. Well, you decided to write him off in the Endgame movie. And then also with him saying that, hey, we were probably going to go in a different direction with Kang Dynasty anyway, because Kang wasn't as big as Thanos, which, you know, you were literally going to have a Kang Dynasty movie. So that kind of damage control of like, oh, this was the plan, even, you know, trying to, you know, distance away from Jonathan Majors kind of, you know, legal situation. So I'm kind of like, I don't know if y'all are ready for it's probably gonna be a great movie, but I don't know if y'all are ready for it. Yeah.
Yes, because like if you think about it, like each Avengers movie had some type of build up to it, with I think the exception being Age of Ultron. That one still like it kind of got alluded to, but only if you like followed like the Iron Man movies like very closely.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you looked at Iron Man, sort of like, yeah. Then Avengers Age of Ultron. Oh yeah. And if you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like then it kind of made sense. But like each other, like Avengers movie, like had something to build up to.
But then, yeah, even like to what you mentioned, even I think the Winter Soldier, it had Wanda and the Quicksilver right at the end of the end credit scenes.
Wait, no, wait,
Because they were in Age of Ultron, so like there was this mid-credits that fed into them being in that movie.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I think it was Winter Soldier. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I don't remember like which movie it was, but I do know like, yeah, they were in a post-credit scene.
But to your point, yeah, it built up previously.
Yeah, and as I said, like this movie, like we kind of like have no frame of reference because of the fact like they changed up what the original plan was going to be. So it's like now you're kind of like, it's kind of like trying to turn a teaser for Avengers, well, a teaser for Avengers, the first Avengers movie, into a teaser for Avengers Infinity War. Like you're trying to build up two separate event, or you're building up to one event and is now trying to pivot to another event. And now you're trying to like play damage code by having all the new teasers leading up to this new event, but you're still got those old teasers to kind of deal with. So how are you going to like square that circle?
That's a good point, because with King, it was setting up, hey, there's this multiverse, there's these like three different like King leaders in a sense. And like, okay, now we understand the dynamic of how you introducing all these new characters, emerging the different worlds and having to, you know, follow those plots. With this being Doomsday, again, we now have to change our frame of reference. We've seen Doom on screen three different times with varying levels of ability. I know in the comics, sometimes he can be, as we mentioned, like King level and higher of a ruler. And then also sometimes it's like, hey, he squabbles against the Fantastic Four and gets beat. You know, so now why do we have to have all the former X-Men, all the former, you know, new Avengers, young Avengers, and stuff like that kind of pop in? So that's kind of like my concern, because all we have before that is a Spider-Man movie, which is supposed to be a street level movie, and Tom Holland isn't even confirmed for Doomsday. He might be in it, might not be. It would kind of be a missed opportunity potentially if we don't see him interact with quote unquote Tony. So yeah, that's just kind of my concern. I think they'll pull it off, but I don't know how else they get there, because with the shows coming out this year, it's Wonder Man, and I have no clue who Wonder Man is. And then also just like some minor shows.
Yeah, and all I would say about Wonder Man is he D-list. he D-list. That's all I gotta say about him.
Also, all right.
Hashtag justice for Blade.
You better, that might come out. I feel like we might actually get GTA before Blade.
That's why I say hashtag justice for Blade.
We might get Beyond the Spider-Verse before Blade.
Listen, we got Destiny's Child being reunited before Blade, before GTA 6 too.
All right, so, and my just second question coming off of this again, are superhero properties back?
I think they're slowly getting back in the right direction. As I said, like we're on the heels of basically two new universes, if you will, with, and like the properties like that are being adapted are the like are being like much more hopeful and being much more, you know, on the side of optimism rather than the pessimistic or even just realistic takes on like superheroes nowadays. But yeah, I think if they keep up the way that they're going right now, they are in good shape.
I would say this kind of just showing the popularity of a Superman and then the Fantastic Four, especially with like kind of what Marvel has been through over the past few years post Endgame. I would say you need to get the big character. If you want to make a lot of money, you need to get the big characters right. And then in terms of like smaller characters, you just need to have a really great story like the Thunderbolts / New Avengers, where I think that's where Captain America kind of fell apart because of reshoots and everything. But I do think if you get the big things right, people will choose to follow. And Fantastic Four and Superman are both like something we've been waiting to see get right for a long time, especially. But I also think something that we've also seen is that we're done with origin stories for these characters.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think that's over.
Yeah, yeah. Origin stories are basically non-existent anymore because, again, Fantastic Four, you only get like a couple seconds. Boom, you're already in there. Superman, you already deep into it. So yeah. I think, again, they go on the this cuff of, you know what it is.
All right. So from there, we are going to get into our awards. All right. For my first award, I am going to a character that was just like incredibly told. I think they, out of all the characters, they got this one right and had the best kind of arc in it. I'm going with the Invisible Woman, Sue. With that, Sue Richards, we are going with the spotlight is yours. Just because of just like how incredible she is written. She kept the team together. She wasn't just like the purpose of eye candy, like in the first Fantastic Four, or just like the, you know, trying to be something to be one in the second Fantastic Four. Well, Fan Four Stick, as we say, the ones that we're trying to erase from our memory. And then just seeing how powerful she is. I do think it kind of showed, like, she might be the most powerful one, to be honest with you, other than Franklin, who, but I definitely got to give it to Sue. Spotlight is yours.
Yeah, and Sue, you might as well just go ahead, stay up on here, girl, because I'm going to hit you with this. I'm going Super Saiyan, because you went off. You went off on that last bit. Yes, you gave up your life, but girl, that was boss energy. You again, you hands down the most popular, well, the most powerful of the OG four. And we do not deny your status, Hood Queen. Yep, go ahead and take I'm going Super Saiyan award as well.
All right, for my next and final award, we have Teamwork Makes the Dream Work. So this goes to none other than the Fantastic Four plus the Silver Surfer. Just with their final fight scene in order to defeat Galactus, the plan, like the multiple plans that they had to work together, what you also mentioned, Meech, with like how they with their minds bounced off of each other, the way I think what it perfectly encapsulated that was the scene where they were in the spaceship and they were flying. And I was like, okay, we need you to do this. Okay, we need you to do that. How they so seamlessly work together, obviously with this being 4 years in and then being best friends and family, it really works. So ultimately being a team, being a family to defeat Galactus, there was no other way for it to be done.
Yep. And I'm just going ahead and keep one of the members of the crew up here because my next and final award is the Low-Key Genius Award. Goes to, again, a character who's much smarter than they're portrayed to be, a character who's much smarter than how they're portrayed not only in the past movies but also the comics as well. Johnny Storm, you being up here, my boy, because you out here, you did in a few days what linguists and language experts needed decades to do, and that is translate a whole language from scratch. You did that, and your plan to make the Silver Surfer go do a heel face turn was absolutely masterful work. Yes, and don't think we didn't see you try to sacrifice yourself for the greater good. I feel you, my boy. So, yeah, you just go ahead and get this Low-Key Genius Award.
Now, before we get into tiers, there is something that just occurred to me. I think either DC or Marvel has a spy amongst their midst, because tell me why this movie, one of the big plot points was Johnny figuring out the language of the Silver Surfer and her people, and why in Superman, one of the major plot points was figuring out the language of the Kryptonians.
Wait.
Why?
Wait, hold on. Hold on a sec.
This movie came out 3 weeks apart. What's going on?
Listen, hopeful movies translating alien languages into, talking about the two top superheroes of their time.
James Gunn got some people on the inside.
Or Kevin Feige got people on the inside. They both got people on the inside. They taking ideas from each other.
That's it. I just literally popped into my head. So.
Nah, you crazy.
All right, let's get into tiers.
All right. The tiers is from F tier, which you're being banished to the Shadow Realm, all the way up to the S tier of Citizen Kane. Where are you placing this movie?
This was tough. This was tough. Again, like we mentioned, both this and Superman were probably the most two anticipated of the movies of the year in terms of nerddom. I would say both of them knocked it out of the park. This movie definitely made me want to see multiple Fantastic Four movies, made me want to see them interact with other heroes, how they interplay with Doomsday. Yes, Spider-Man, they might actually redeem She-Hulk. Your face slightly changed, but we know that that's actually comic accurate as well. So I'll give it an A. I can't give it an S because I don't think it was transcendent, but it was definitely a movie that was needed and just incredibly well done. Something you can see multiple times, something you can enjoy and take away from. And it was also very simple. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I would very much agree on the A tier. I really do enjoy this movie. I enjoy everything that came along with it. Like it really knocked the ball out of the park. It really like it's really hopeful. Again, this is the first really good Fantastic Four adaptation that is universally acclaimed right now. And again, it gave us like characters who we wanted to. And also, I don't know. And also, one thing, like, I don't know if you noticed this, but hey, this is the only movie, Fantastic Four movie, where Doom isn't the central villain.
That is absolutely true. Yes.
So yes, they're actually building up to Doom rather than just making him the villain of the week, which.
One thing I did find interesting that was that they introduced a lot of other villains. Again, this helps with establishing the world because it isn't the main Marvel universe, but like the Mole Man and among other kind of types of villains in it. So I thought that was interesting. So if they do make a second Fantastic Four movie, it's interesting to see who the villain would be because I don't think it would be Doom since Doom is literally going to be the villain, the main villain of Doomsday.
Also, it's not if they already confirmed a sequel.
Ooh, okay. I love it. I love it.
Yep, they already confirmed a sequel in development.
All right, look forward to that in 2029.
Yep.
All right, perfect. All right, so going from there, we're going to get into our what's hot. So that is what is hot in recently in anime, movies, TV shows, gaming, comics, and the like. So, Meech, what do you have?
All right, so Demon Slayer Infinity Castle coming out in September. Yes, secure your tickets now because I believe the tickets are officially out for you to claim for.
I think it's like August 15th, but.
My B. Oh, wait, I think. Oh, wait, I'm talking about the Japanese version. My bad. My
Yeah.
bad. But still. Also, Chainsaw Man movie dropping in September, which means it's coming out here in probably like November. One Piece. It's we still seeing the culmination of this new arc, and I'm still out here distraught. Hashtag justice for Kuma. Kaiju number eight back in a full swing of things. We out here. I got questions for certain people, Kafka. Next up,
Is
Don.
he on Fraud Watch?
You might be on Fraud Watch, my boy. You might be on Fraud Watch. I need you to. I'm giving you one episode to lock in, otherwise you pack. You want to pack. Dandadan season two. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Rising of the Shield Hero season four. It's happening. I get tired of Civil War plots. And we got My Hero Academia returning in October for that final season or part two to the final season.
Yes.
So yeah, we're ready for that. And then we got Gachioka or however you pronounce that. I just started watching
I
it.
have no clue how to pronounce it.
Yep, I just started watching it. I'm impressed. I'm impressed. You got One Punch Man and Spy Family also dropping in October. We will be there. We will be there. In the realm of comics, One World Under Doom is still happening. Miles Morales is still happening. All New Venom is unfortunately still a thing. And then, oh yeah, the Absolute Universe is cooked. Well, at least Batman's cooked. They just released a teaser image of Absolute Green Arrow. So I'm here like, oh, I wonder how in the world can you screw him up?
I have a question about comics with the Ultimate Universe. I saw that they're doing an Ultimate Universe endgame.
Yeah, the Ultimate Universe is ending.
Dang. I know you love that one compared to the others.
Yes, I love Ultimate Spider-Man because it just it got Peter back in form. I don't know why in the world they're canceling, because they're cooking with the series. I was ready to see the new Ultimate Carnage, the new Ultimate Venom. I'm ready. My body has been ready for it. I want to know what the new version of what Ultimate Hobgoblin gonna be. But nah, it's ending after the 24th issue. But yeah, it's gone. But yeah, unfortunately. All right, moving on. You got Prairie Badlands dropping in the movie sphere. Shrek 5 dropping. Weapons is dropping August 8th. I will be there. We will be there. Conjuring Last Rites better be the last one. Otherwise, I will...
There's going to be a spinoff called The Apparition.
Otherwise, I will be I will be coming after people. I will be making a real life version of The Conjuring, if you will. We got him dropping Stranger Chapter 2, if you care. Black Phone 2, I will be there. Mortal Kombat 2, I will be there. Wicked 2, if for all you heads. Zootopia 2, I know what type of person you are. Even though Zootopia is a good movie, I know what type of half of y'all are. I know what half of y'all are. Five Nights at Freddy's 2, I will be there. I also know what type of person half of y'all are. And then Avatar Fire and Ash, yeah, that's dropping.
New trailer released for it.
yeah, a trailer dropped for it, and I'm just here like, I feel like y'all did this already.
Oh, you think so?
I think y'all did this already. It's crazy. Also, yeah, TV, Alien Earth, Dexter Resurrection is happening. Eyes of Wakanda, I will be there. Marvel Zombies, I will be there. It Welcome to Derry, I will be there.
They released a new trailer as well.
Woo! King of the Hill, I'll be there. Stranger Things for the final part of the final season, I will be there. And then finally, one that I did see the trailer for, Gen 5. That's going to be an emotional one, I ain't going to lie.
Confirmed, it's definitely it's going to interact with the Boys universe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you see the trailer, you know how.
Yes.
And then, and then finally in gaming, Death Stranding 2, Madden 26, Dying Light the Beast, Gears of War, Borderlands 4, Silent Hill, Ghost of Yote, Pokemon Legends EA, and Dead by Daylight has a Walking Dead collab.
Nice.
What you got?
All right, so I'll just be brief. The Naked Gun that drops this week, woo! Friday, I'm definitely going to go see that movie. We have The Bad Guys 2 that is also dropping this weekend. So if you have kids or you've seen the first Bad Guys, check that out. My Dress Up Darling Season 2, an anime that's been going crazy, as well as Call of the Night Season 2. Percy Jackson finally confirmed a Season 2 after like 3 years.
You.
It's coming out in December. Those kids are going to be 30 years old by the time they get to the 6th book. For that season. I mean, it took them 2 to 3 years to get there. Those kids are going to be old by the time they get to the final
book. They're going to be things all over again.
Exactly. So then with that, transitioning quickly into the Freak Out Geek Out, I just want to talk about my Comic-Con experience. That was absolutely amazing. I only got to go for 2 days just because the tickets were selling.
Did you go to?
What do you mean?
Which Comic-Con did you go to?
The San Diego International. So the official one, that was absolutely a blast for the 2 days that I went. Thursday was kind of the main day, and then Sunday was like my shopping day. But just being able to go to the different halls, it was like they were celebrating the 20th anniversary of Avatar, which makes me feel ancient. Something else that's going to be in the What's Hot, Twisted Metal Season 2, that drives...
Oh.
July 31st, so I got to go to that panel, saw Anthony Mackie and the crew interact, and oh my gosh, they were cracking on him so hard. That was so funny. But just like they showed some clips of it, it's gonna be like completely unhinged like this first season, so I'm excited about that. There were some announcements related to Vox Machina, and then also a spinoff of that for people that enjoy D&D, and then Critical Role. So that was absolutely cool. But just getting to see people nerd them, I met the creator, the designer of Danny Phantom, which was so random because I was looking for a different booth, but I just kind of ran into one person dressed in it, and then I saw the designer was at that booth, and they brought him over to take a picture. That was really cool. So it's definitely experienced once in a lifetime. California is a super pretty state. I see why people move there, but then I saw the prices and I see why people move out of there. So,
did you see George Lucas?
I did not go to that panel, but I do know it was present. A lot of people also went to the Hall H panels. Marvel wasn't there that, like, in DC weren't necessarily there. They were there for, like, the Peacemaker in Hall H, but definitely a lot of people were walking around in Fantastic Four. Yeah, it was a great experience overall.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm glad somebody here had a good time.
Yeah. So, ideally, maybe we can both hop on next year. So with that, let's, just for quick housekeeping again, next week, we will be taking a break. The week after, we are going to have our Avengers draft. So that's going to be 2 weeks to serve as our mid-season finale. When we come back, we will discuss and let the people know. So let's get into our words and, plugs. And then get up out of here.
All right. So we got Instagram, X formerly known as Twitter, and Threads, BlurredCity22. Likes, comments, subscribe. You already know what the deal is. If you want to join our Discord family, a Fantastic Fordom, that link is in the Instagram page. We also have our YouTube and Patreon, Blurred City Pod. If you want to donate some cheddar, get access to episodes not seen before on this podcast. You also have our email address, blurredcity22@gmail.com. If you want to send email suggestions for your episodes, questions for our Q&As, you also have spam mail. If you want to send that, that can go to us as well, because they're only gonna end up out of here. Finally, I'm the Jedi Bono Moosefar on Instagram and TikTok. However long we got TikTok left before they switch to the American version.
All right, for my individual author pages, we have my Instagram, that is Mitri_Dash, that is Mitri_Dash. For my X/Twitter, that is @TheMad-16. And if you're interested in my book, Phantom Reckoning, that is available on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Noble. All right, so Mitri, can you leave us with some words of encouragement?
Absolutely. It's that in this life, everyone has strengths, everyone has weaknesses. But if you cooperate and work together with one another, you can actually have a group of people who can help cover for each other's weaknesses and become truly fantastic.
Great. So as we always say, it's not goodbye forever. It's just goodbye for now. And that's the Blurred City Podcast.
See ya later.